This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around because later in the episode, we'll break down today's biggest stories in the Chicago area. But first, if you are planning a beach day in Chicago, you might notice something new as you pull up in your car. Parking gates. The Park District has been rolling out automated pay-to-park systems at several beaches across the city, including Foster, Waveland, Oakwood, and Rainbow Beach. The agency says this is a more efficient way to manage parking. It could bring in millions of dollars in revenue. But for some Chicagoans, especially people who live on the South Side, it's raising some bigger questions. Like, who is the lakefront really for? And does this change make things run smoother, or does it put another price on public space? In this episode, we'll dig into both sides of the issue with a panel of guests. At the table was Sherry Williams, who's president of the Burnham Park Advisory Council, Brian Gladstein, who's executive director of Friends of the Parks, and Alderman Lamont Robinson of the 4th Ward on the city's south side. The ward includes the lakefront between Roosevelt and 53rd Street. Now, the lakefront, as we know, is often referred to as Chicago's front yard. So I started by asking Alderman Robinson, do we all have equal access? Here's what he had to say.
We absolutely do, and we absolutely should. Which is why my predecessor, President Tony Preckwinkle, 20 years ago made sure in the 4th Ward there is access to the lake. We have three bridges that allow residents not only of the 4th Ward, but other wards to be able to access the lakefront. And we see those beautiful bridges often as we travel north and south on Lakeshore Drive. But the answer is yes, everyone should be able to go to our beautiful beaches and to be safe.
Yeah, everyone should be able to. That's correct. But tell me your reaction then to these new pay-to-park barriers that are up.
The pay-to-park barriers, the misconception is these are new. In 2009, the first beach was North Avenue. Now we see these arms that are coming down that are new to folks. But again, since 2009, folks have been paying at the beach. Now the parking is enforced. And part of that is certainly making sure that revenue comes in. $9.4 million goes back into the parks to make sure that there are beautiful parks across the city of Chicago. And we know we need that revenue, particularly now with all of the budget constraints that we're having in the city of Chicago.
Tell me more about the parking situation prior to these barriers being installed, Alderman.
Prior to these barriers being installed, folks would park, and there was no enforcement to pay. We know that we have this very interesting scenario about paying for parking on a city street, but it was not enforced at the Park District. There are also concerns, particularly in the 4th Ward, about loitering and people spending overnight time at the park, and this will not allow that to happen. Again, we need to make sure that our beaches are safe and people are able to get to those beaches and have access. And although folks are seeing a difference, again, I want your your listeners to understand that this has been happening since 2009, but it was not enforced. And now it's being enforced and, again, needing the revenue so we can have not only beautiful parks, but also safe parks.
Let's hear now from Sherry and Brian. Sherry, you first. Tell me what you're hearing from residents.
Well, most residents that I've spoken to share with me, you know, could you imagine a place, meaning a park, where citizens have to pay an additional tax to visit a park that they really believe they should benefit visiting without an additional burden? You know, and often people share with me, and I agree wholeheartedly, are we sure this is the correct path that we should take? And although I understand the constraints that happen when there aren't enough parking spaces, and certainly for 39th Street, it's a really well-attended park. But I believe that we could give a little bit more attention to not having a gated paid parking system at that particular park especially. Mm-hmm. And I really look at it as sort of a poll tax. And I push back on this, you know, looking at the access at 35th and Lake Park, you know, that $18.3 million budget for that beautiful bridge turned into a $26 million budget. So I believe there are ways that how we make certain that assets are improved, that we certainly can look at a different way to have better access for our community.
Yeah. Brian, I should also mention a couple of months ago in early March, a petition started circulating. It says, you know, for accountability at the Chicago Park District. It was some Chicago residents as well as the Park Advisory Council volunteers. We got over 700 signatures so far, of course, in part of the petition. They're talking about this beachfront access or lack thereof, it seems. Tell me what else you're hearing.
Yeah, I think there's a couple concerns that I'm hearing and we're hearing. One is when you see a gate, kind of what that means and brings up for people is kind of the sense of lack of inclusion and the opposite, lack of access, lack of equity. And so I think part of this is also just a little bit jarring when you are kind of getting off the Lakeshore Drive and you see a gate. And then you feel like maybe this isn't a place for me.
Yeah, stay with that point because the alderman mentioned, I mean, we've had parking meters before, right? Why are these physical barriers hitting such a nerve with so many people, Brian?
You know, our lakefront was set up by our founders to be forever open, clear, and free. And if we have to pay for parking and for certain people, up to $24 a day to spend a day with their family at the beach is a big price to pay. And they may choose to do something else. And so is our lakefront really free? Is it really open? Mm-hmm. Is it really clear if we have to pay to access it?
Now, In the Loop did invite Chicago Park District Superintendent and CEO Carlos Ramirez Rosa to join us for the conversation. However, we learned this morning that he's not available. We're going to continue to work with him, though, to get him on the show to talk more about this topic. In a statement that the Park District did send us, they say in part, quote, parking rates have not increased as a result of these upgrades. Under the new system, patrons receive a 15-minute grace period, which can be used for pickup, drop-off, or unloading supplies. That grace period did not exist under the previous system. In addition, automated gates help with park security, enhancing safety for all park visitors. Your reaction to that statement, Sherry?
Well, while well-intended, I really believe that other opportunities to make our park safe should be considered. I can't help but remember, because I'm old enough to remember visiting Ogden Park in the 1960s, that blacks were regulated to remain on the Racine side of that park and not to venture over to the Loomis side. So when I saw the gates go up, I immediately thought about this again was another way to provide a barrier for us to enjoy our parks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, however well-intended, I believe that if we needed more attention to these beautiful assets, that perhaps we should have had some conversations with community about how do we remain safe? How do we use the park advisory councils to support our voices so that many people will not feel locked out?
Alderman,
how
are you feeling about what you're hearing?
Certainly those sentiments. And in the city of Chicago, we have a checkered history. We have a checkered past. But at this juncture, our city is at a very interesting crossroads, and everyone should have access to our beaches.
What are you referring to when you say we're at an interesting crossroads?
We're at an interesting crossroads financially, and we need to make sure that we're investing in our parks. But we can't do this on the backs of citizens as it relates to taxes, particularly our property taxes. And so we have to figure out what ways are we looking at bringing revenue into the city. And it is not always correct. We struggle with this on a regular basis. But again, we need to make sure that our children have beautiful parks across the city and everyone has access. And again, we need to look at ways that we bring in revenue to the city of Chicago. And this is one way we can do that. And I certainly understand from the folks that are here with me today, their concerns, and there is a balance. And certainly as the alderman of the 4th Ward that represents the lakefront, certainly would like to continue to have conversations regarding this. But I think the viewers need to understand, and listeners, excuse me, that we have to look at ways to bring in revenue in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I want to stay with the financial piece of this. So the Park District is expecting to raise more than $9 million this year with this parking system. As you pointed out, we're already facing a long-term structural deficit here. So do you think it makes sense for the money to go only to the parks at a moment like this?
That is something that we should look at. I think that everything, and the mayor has mentioned this, that we should be looking at everything on, everything is on the table, excuse me. And this is one of the areas that we should be looking at. Again, we cannot tax our way out of our issues in the city of Chicago. And we have to look at ways to bring in revenue and make sure that city services are consistent. And we're looking at that coming up in the budget cycle that we're going to be having with my colleagues. And this is something that I can certainly look into with my colleagues. That's something that I appreciate you bringing up this morning.
What would you like to see the revenue generated from barriers used for, Brian?
Yeah, I know we've been working a lot with the Chicago Park District around the finances, and I agree with the alderman that we need to look at solutions to put money back in our parks and in our broader community. The Park District has just launched a participatory budgeting process, which we sit on that steering committee. Mm-hmm. The question is this the best path forward? And is the money getting back to those communities and those parks specifically, or is it going into the general coffers? I actually just don't know that answer. Mm-hmm. But I would love to kind of have a conversation to figure out and ensure that the money is going directly to programs, to services, to infrastructure of these parks, especially in areas in the south and west side that need it so much. I think the other issue is the privatization issue. The issue that we are talking about, a private parking company running and running this parking system. And we know in Chicago years ago that you know, our asset of parking that was owned by the city was moved and privatized. We know that there's a lot of move to privatize areas in our parks. Mm-hmm. And this is a potentially another attempt to see privatization that is happening in our public space. And is that really the direction we want to go? And what I've also heard is a concern around surveillance. That people drive in, their license plates are scanned.
So you're hearing privacy concerns.
Correct, without consent. And now they're in a database that they don't know about. And it's, you know, we're moving into this era around data and AI. And is that really what we want when people are going to our public spaces, our places that are of common good, to then feel like they're being watched? And is that actually the safety we are talking about?
Any specifics, Alderman, that you can offer on what, how this revenue is going to be used? I mean, also, do we know what percentage goes to the parking company involved?
I do not have that information today in front of me, but I can tell your listeners that in the upcoming months, we will have the Park District superintendent and personnel in front of us to be able to drill down where those resources are going. We talked about that $9.4 million, what parks, south and west sides. Generally, over years, we know that we have had a lack of investment in parks on the south and west sides. And so I look forward to, with my colleagues, getting to the bottom of exactly where that funding is going. And these budget committee hearings are open. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that my colleagues that are here with me today from the Burnham District and Friends of the Park will come and listen, and others will come and be able to share their thoughts about our parks, the parking, and where we are investing this $9.4 million.
Sherry, you've pointed to a number of issues with parking at the beachfront prior to the construction of these barriers. You want to talk more about that?
Yes, I've often dubbed these barriers as park apartheid, and I know that it's a very strong word to say, but certainly if you've operated your family's needs through having just really not enough money to pay for what might be considered recreation, going to a local park has always been a great way in which communities have enjoyed these assets. And so I'm really hoping that not just looking at how budgets can solve some of the issues with our parks needing improvements. But I'm really hoping that remedies would also include having maybe free passes available at the libraries or park facilities for those who need to pay for parking meters and they don't have the money for it. Free passes are often are offered through the Field Museum and other museums throughout the city of Chicago that folks go to the library and get. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping that this remedy would be considered as well, that first come, first serve, so many passes are available to those who enjoy our park facilities.
Yeah,
be able to pay for meters.
And Sherry, is there also a concern about congestion on busy beach days, especially I'm thinking of Oakwood Beach and that congestion sort of blocking access to DuSable Lakeshore Drive?
Yes, and so that safety concern certainly is top of mind, but that is really not one of the things that I feel is priority for those that I speak with. They believe that, community policing or additional support for remedying traffic concerns is one that the Chicago Police Department and the Chicago Park District Police, as well as the overlapping police department of the University of Chicago, all overlap in this one area between, say, 31st Street and
right.
55th Street. So I really believe a coordinated effort from all of the police powers should be included in the conversation.
Alderman, that that Park District statement I read a portion of earlier, it mentioned enhanced safety for residents. Say a bit more on that. Like, how will these barriers impact security? Do you expect the fees and barriers are going to help reduce crime?
Well, let me just say this. As the alder of the 4th Ward, 31st Street Beach, that had two shootings, one fatal, two summers ago, this is a serious concern. Again, beach access should be available to everyone, but we want to make sure our beaches are safe. And having issues at the beach as relates to shootings is problematic. And we have license plate readers across the city of Chicago. Having them on the beach, I understand those concerns as it relates to over-surveillance of mm-hmm. residents of the city of Chicago. But we want to make sure that folks are safe. And if issues do happen, we want to be able to make sure that we find those folks that are involved. And so this is part of it. And again, we want to make sure that it goes back to safety. And I appreciate what was mentioned a little earlier as it relates to passes. I think that that is a great idea, and that is why it's important that we do have community involvement. And that is something, as the alderman of the 4th Ward and working alongside of my colleagues, I will look into that, and I think that that is something that we can do.
Yeah. I think there's the security issue, yes, privacy issue. I think about the cost of everything right now, right? We're all dealing with, increasing gas prices. They're going up every single day. Plastic bag fees are up. Just the cost of buying food is up. There's a parking meter deal, right, that Chicagoans love to hate from 2008, which, benefits the parking company and not necessarily the city. What do you say, Alderman, to Chicagoans who say they feel at this time, just nickel and dimed more and more every year?
That I absolutely understand it as a citizen also and a taxpayer of the city of Chicago. We know that, unfortunately, the can has been kicked down the road. And now it is time for us to come to reality about taxes and services. And we, as I mentioned a little earlier, we are at a crossroads in the city of Chicago. We have to figure out how to right-size the ship and how to make sure that we continue to keep the services that we have and looking at revenue across the board. The mayor has said this, and I agree with him. Everything is on the table because we have not been good stewards of taxpayer money. And this is certainly before my time as alderman. But now is the time for us to get our act together and figure out how to make sure that we are the city that works and we are investing back in city services.
We'll leave it there for now. That's 4th Ward Alderman Lamont Robinson. We've had Brian Gladstein, Executive Director of Friends of the Parks, with us, and Sherry Williams, who's President of the Burnham Park Advisory Council. Chicago Park District CEO Carlos Ramirez-Rosa was unable to join us today. We hope to have him on in future to continue this discussion. Thank you, folks.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Connection is the greatest strength in the fight against suicide. Together, we can encourage those who are struggling to seek help and to know they're not alone. For free resources or to learn how you can get involved in their mission, visit afsp.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Time now for a quick look at the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. At the table to help me break them down was an all WBEZ lineup. Reporter Araceli Gomez-Aldana, senior producer Meha Ahmed, and as always, our morning edition anchor, Claire Lane. Come one, come all, tickets to the long-awaited Obama Presidential Center are now on sale. Claire kicked things off with the details.
Ticket sales are live. Sun-Times was estimating that thousands of people were going to be clicking that button right at the 9 o'clock drop. We've been reporting on this, for months. A lot of hype, a lot of buildup, a lot of different programs and sort of partnerships
it's
being announced.
It's like trying to get concert tickets.
Arts, sports, you name it. Yeah. I think it's going to be a huge, also the timing is pretty great given that it's going to be opening in the summer, cultural attraction for tourists, but also communities like field trips for campers. You, we know, Sasha, are vying for your invite.
Oh, I want to go.
I want to go so badly. I also have family reaching out from the East Coast. I mean, they've been asking, when are the tickets going on sale? I'm like, really? This is a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Of course it is. It's a huge deal. So I, of course, sent the link to our suntimes.com article with all the details on how to jump in line on May 6th. And so I hope they're on the they're on the website right now.
Did they get a ticket for me?
I'll find out after I get off air. So the Center Araceli, it opens on Juneteenth, which is pretty historic in itself. So we're about a month away, right? It's over a month away. But I feel like this is such a long time coming. We've been waiting for so long.
You know, I was thinking back to when it was even first announced, and that was like, it was proposed in like 2018. There was already information about potential, you know, it being potentially here before then. And I was like, little Araceli was so young back then in 2018. Where was she? I wasn't even really in Chicago yet. So that's a long time ago. And then, of course, they projected it was going to open in 2021, but then there were delays, and those delays have been due to lawsuits and budgets going over and people, you know, asking for lots of questions about the area and what it can do to that area. So it has been a long time.
Community benefits agreements.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So many things. Remind us, Meha, what all of this includes. What will be inside the Obama Presidential Center?
So there's the inside and the outside, right? So this is over 19 acres, a little over 19 acres. There's a 5,000 square foot Chicago Public Library. If you've seen pictures of the building, it's tall, right? Like it's more, looks more vertical than horizontal.
You can't miss it.
It's an 8-story museum building. There will also be an athletic facility with an NBA-sized court. Outside, there's going to be, you know, gardens, parks. There's, I think, a vegetable garden and an outdoor sledding hill.
Wow.
Which I'm excited about because there's not enough places to sled around here.
That's true, actually.
Yeah. Now, we should mention late-night talk show host Stephen Colbert sat down with Barack Obama at the Presidential Center. Did you catch this, Meha?
Yeah, and it was a pretty cool get for Stephen Colbert. He's talked to Obama before, but, you know, his show ends in a couple weeks. I think it's May 21st. And so one of his last episodes, he was able to snag a sit-down with, you know, former President Barack Obama at the Presidential Center. And, you know, it was, I mean, as you can imagine, it was very funny, but also very political.
Yeah.
And, you know, they covered a wide range of things, including how much he loves Chicago.
Yeah. And they also talked about how much the neighborhood of Jackson Park means to him.
Michelle grew up about a mile from here. Our wedding reception was about 5 minutes from here. My daughters were born in that hospital right there. I first arrived in Chicago driving down a road that is now been replaced by this building. The first apartment I stayed in Chicago is literally 3 blocks away.
I love the way Obama loves Chicago and loves the fact that his wife is a girl from the South Side. He always references that.
I mean, yes. He has so many memories of Second City here and having their first kid being in a tiny apartment. I mean, they're bonded in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they both shared what their favorite place in Chicago was and I like this question, their least favorite place in Chicago.
Oh.
Which,
do tell.
Unsurprisingly, Colbert's was Lower Wacker Drive. The impound lot.
Oh, sure.
And Obama's was the DMV, which he doesn't have to go to anymore.
Well, this just in, folks, the online wait time right now for Obama Presidential Center tickets is more than an hour.
Okay.
Pack your patience.
I was going to say, do it now, Sasha, so when you get off air.
I can. I got to talk to you guys. So that conversation continued, Meha, because they also seemed to call out the current presidential administration.
Yeah, as you can imagine. I mean, they talked about, like, is a hot dog a sandwich or a hot dog? I mean, they did all that, right? But they did all the funny Chicago stuff, but they did talk a lot about politics as well. And, you know, Stephen Colbert asked, as a former president, looking back, what are the powers that he thinks the president should not have? And it seemed like Obama kind of took a dig at the current administration for the way it's pushed sort of the basic norms of the seat. He said, you know, for example, the president shouldn't direct the attorney general to go around prosecuting just whoever the president wants, that this was a basic norm that we need to return to and codify. He said the AG is the people's lawyer, not the president's consigliere. That we shouldn't politicize our military. And he also said the president shouldn't have, this quote, the president of the U.S. shouldn't have a bunch of side hustles.
Ooh, not holding back.
It wasn't holding back.
No.
Yeah.
In other news that we're following, Araceli, Illinois State Police, they're launching an investigation into a deadly ICE shooting. Fill us in.
Yeah, so if we go back, the first deadly shooting from federal agents when the increased operation or deportation operations happened in Chicago and the Chicago area was Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, and that actually happened in Franklin Park. So
that's right, yeah.
Now the Franklin Police is asking the Illinois State Police to investigate the shooting, and it happened during a traffic stop, as we know. So a lot of things have been happening. You know, one thing that we know is that there's been a state commissioned report. That report is urging Illinois lawmakers to enforce these agencies to investigate and potentially prosecute alleged crimes committed by federal agents during Operation Midway Blitz. And so state lawmakers also want a special prosecutor in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. This is where it gets like back and forth, back and forth, right? Because this coalition is asking State Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke's office to investigate. They're saying we really can't do anything. Now that there's this investigation, we finally can see an opening to see what can happen and if there will be anyone
yeah,
held
that's
accountable.
Significant. Claire, we were talking about Barack Obama earlier. Now Illinois' U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, he's also calling out the Trump administration. This is over its actions against Obama era policy. What's going on?
Yeah, so this is against the DACA program. There's a recent legal ruling by the Board of Immigration Appeals that's essentially stating the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program will no longer protect recipients from removal proceedings or deportation. So current DACA recipients can continue to renew their status and work authorization every 2 years. That's happening. The federal government is doing that. But right now, it's not processing any new DACA applications. So you can submit them, but they're not going to process it. And this is back and forth, some court battles happening, especially in Texas. So at a press conference yesterday, Durbin just saying that this continued legal battle is a betrayal of young people and their families. And it just continues to be something that here in Illinois he stands against.
Yeah. Let's talk health news, Araceli. There's new information on vaccine rates among Illinois children. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're not doing bad. So Illinois vaccine rates, they remain high. And this was, you know, amid fears from public health officials that were very worried that because of some federal, you know, reduced federal requirements, that those that were most vulnerable were going to be the most affected. But according to new state data, 96.8% of measles vaccine rate across the state. So not, you know, not bad. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, it is a little bit lower than the rest of the state. But then I, you know, when you kind of look at the data and you think here locally, those requirements have been kind of upheld. So you're like, please, everyone, state health officials, everyone's like, we need these.
Right.
But then if you compare it to a county that's like south when it comes to measles rates, for example, Pulaski County, and that's south, like more than 5 hours away from Chicago. Mm-hmm. They're the only area that is below 90% measles vaccination rate. So something to look at there.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Speaking of schools, Claire, a local school leader was just awarded the prestigious Golden Apple Award.
Yay.
Who was the lucky winner?
Very prestigious, a huge honor. This is the principal of the all-boys Catholic high school on the south side, Leo High School, and it's Shaka Rawl. So he's getting the $10,000 Golden Apple Reward, also the apple itself.
Nice.
He's also going to have the opportunity to take some classes at Northwestern. But this fall, you had them on your show. You remember, this is the same Leo.
Superstars from America's Got Talent.
Exactly. The choir, they received that national acclaim from taking fourth on America's Got Talent. But also, this high school has really expanded its STEM program. It has a state-of-the-art STEM lab that it's recently gotten. So making a lot of strides on the south side.
That's amazing.
Congratulations, Principal Rawls from Leo Catholic High School. Now, in other Catholic news, Meha, this week is marking 1 year of the Chicago Pope.
Yes.
The Pope.
Are you kidding?
The
has
Pope.
It been that long?
It has. I know. That year
no
goes by
No way it's
quick.
Been that long.
Yeah, May 8th he was
wow.
elected. The Pope.
Literally surprised
called.
Right now.
Called, yes, called. That's a better
summoned.
Word. Summoned. Chosen. So,
yes.
Yeah, Pope Leo XIV, our Chicago Pope, the first ever American Pope. This is 1 year in his role, and it's been an active year.
Yeah, let's reflect for a second. What do you all think? How's he done for the first year? American Pope from Chicago.
To me, I think the biggest takeaway is that, one, we've never had an American Pope before. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the first one would be, I feel like, of course, it makes sense. It's from the person's from Chicago. But, you know, he's really spent the year defending migrants. He's been anti-war. He's called for peace. He's, you know, and it's been really fascinating to watch the two most powerful leaders in the world,
mm-hmm.
both be from America. Obviously, we have the president and we have the Pope. And they are so far apart. Like politically yeah. on pretty much most issues and human rights issues. I think that sort of, I hate to say the word feud, but that dynamic has been fascinating for me
and
to watch.
He's just been so, you know, he doesn't do a lot of like social media stuff, but I feel like in a way beloved by social media, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the Pope and we don't really think about their online presence as much, but this is probably the first time that we do have some of the online presence from him. So
beloved by folks on social media and beloved by Sox fans.
That's right. Chicago. And I think he's done Chicago very proud, especially, and continues to keep that local connection to people, whether it's taking a baseball from a crowd, you know, which we've seen him do near the Vatican, or just continuing to represent us.
Yeah. I wonder when he's going to come.
I can't wait. That's going to be cool. What other stories are you following, Claire?
Well, this has been all week tracking some news from Brookfield Zoo. Strike happened on Monday. Union workers walked off the job, unable to reach an agreement. They had a contract extension. They were negotiating with the zoo, but apparently they will be back to work tomorrow. They've still been tending to the animals, we should say, but they've reached a tentative agreement, adding some jobs, some staffing positions for the zoo's animal care and facilities team was a big item. Also, continued contributions to their healthcare programming. So all of that sounds like it's going to get approved, but they are scheduled to vote later today. So we'll keep you posted, as we always do.
That's right. Now, every year around this time, Araceli, we keep a close eye on Chicago's Montrose Beach to see the latest with our favorite piping plovers.
Oh, my God.
They've returned. Yes. What are we seeing?
Yes. And, you know, I used to follow this like my life depended on it. I did have to kind of like be like, what's happening so far this season? And shout out to Block Club, who always really covers the story really well. But we know that the first female has returned. So Sea Rocket is back, and this is good because this might mean that Sea Rocket and Imani can all pair up again and have potential chicks. And last two summers they've had chicks, but there was ups and downs with my emotional roller coaster because it was, you know, some of the babies didn't make it and there was a hawk that they had to worry about. So maybe this year will be really good news.
I really missed the boat on Sea Rocket. I hadn't heard about Sea Rocket till today.
Sea Rockets.
No, I don't know how I missed that one.
I know.
I'm focused on Monty and Rose.
Monty and Rose. I'm still stuck on them.
Yeah.
Well, Meha, tell us about these delivery robots that we're talking about. We spent so much time talking about because they were shattering the glasses of CTA bus stop shelters.
Yeah.
Experts are saying that they have some growing up to do.
Yeah, this is from reporting from our Chicago Sun-Times colleague, Mohammed Samra. He reported what some experts and scientists who have been looking into this, trying to examine, like, what are the best ways that these robots can operate and where is there room to grow. And some of the solutions seem to be improving their, quote, complex internal sensors. And addressing this, I don't know why this makes me laugh. Addressing the simple optical illusion that makes clean glass harder to see than a dirty surface. So it seems like.
So the bus shelters were too clean.
Uh-huh.
Which is not something that the CTA bus stops get accused of being a lot, but apparently. It was cleaner than the robots could sense, so they didn't see the glass.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do we need them?
No.
Can we just have people?
I mean, I haven't used one
yet. Because people can see the glass.
Exactly. We don't have to teach people to not go into it. No?
I don't know. I fall into that, you know.
Yeah.
It feels all too Uncanny Valley and, you know, the robots have taken over
a
bit.
A little too much technology.
We're solving a problem that we didn't need to solve in the first place.
Like, who asked for this?
Exactly.
WBEZ's Araceli Gomez-Aldana, Meha Ahmed, and Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.